Okay. All right, now we're serious about starting. The topic of this evening's lecture is the halachic view of assisted reproductive technologies. There is not a congregational rabbi, I imagine, who is out there who is not dealing with these issues as we speak. The amount of couples that are having issues with fertility, etc., has been growing over the last few years pretty steadily. It's a little unclear why. In Manhattan, we blame it on the fact that women have careers first and only start about thinking about a family at a later age, and therefore their fertility rates are lower. Truth of the matter is that that does not really explain everything. The issues seem to be across the board, whether it's environmental, whatever it is. There are many issues out there. So I want to discuss a little bit as an overview, not to poskin any shilas. Everybody who has issues, feel free to talk to your local Orthodox rabbinic authority, but just to discuss some of the issues that are involved. Come late, you have to sit in front.
You never sat in front.
You'll know for next time.
I only did it one time, and I paid them too.
Obviously, the place to start is in the very beginning, a very good place to start. The Chumash in Parshas Bereishis talks about the very first mitzvah, the mitzvah of Peru Revu, that there is a mitzvah to procreate. We know from the Gemara that there is a mitzvah that people have to have a son and a daughter. That is the Iker mitzvah. According to the large majority of opinions, this commandment of Peru Revu only applies to men. Now, one needn't be a scientist to figure out that even though the mitzvah may not apply to women, women play a somewhat integral part of this mitzvah. And in fact, there is a fair amount of discussion as to the woman's relationship to the mitzvah as well, and it is somewhat important, as we will see going forward. So, for example, the Gemara in the second parak of Kedushin talks about the fact that technically one is able to marry a woman or a woman to marry a man through by using a shliach, an agent, that I have a right to tell somebody, can you please go give this money, give this ring to this woman, and say, I'm giving you this ring in order that you'll be married to so-and-so. Similarly, a woman has a right to say, this woman is my agent, she will accept Kesef Kedushin for me. I always thought this was a good way to get good pictures. If I'm not that particularly good looking, my wife is, and we could both have agents who could appear under the chuppah and do it, you know, hire two models, and our pictures will look much better. So the Gemara says that even though that is a possibility, it recommends that you don't do it. Why? Because it's mitzvah bo yosem yibishlucho. It's a greater mitzvah. When it comes to the mitzvahs, it's better to do it yourself than to do it on behalf of your agent. Therefore, a man should not make an agent, mitzvah bo yosem yibishlucho. A woman should not make an agent, mitzvah ba yosem yibishlucha, as the Gemara says. A lot of the Rishonim ask, wait a second. I understand by the man, he's doing a mitzvah, he's getting married, a prerequisite for having a family of Peruvu. I thought we said women aren't with chayv and Peruvu. They're not obligated to do this mitzvah. So where are you saying, why shouldn't they be able to allow to make an agent? You say mitzvah bo yosem yibishlucha. Sounds like it's a mitzvah. So there's where he says, whenever there is a mitzvah that somebody can't do without the help of another person, then that person who is facilitating the mitzvah also gets the mitzvah. So even though women are technically not obligated in the mitzvah of having children, since it would be very difficult for men to have children without women. In fact, if cloning should become a reality, women will be able to have children without men, but men will still not be able to have children without women. You need an egg. We can't do that. No. We can do the cheek cell part, that we're pretty good at. But beyond that, we will still not be able to do it, likely. So therefore, the Ran says that women, even though they are technically not obligated in this mitzvah, still they have a part of the mitzvah as well. Now that becomes very important, because obviously, if we're going to run into halachic issues involved in artificial reproductive technologies, we want to be able to balance off any issue with the idea of, well, they're doing a mitzvah. People are required to have children. And therefore, even though there might be an issue involved in this, since ultimately, if things work out well, like everybody does, they will in fact be being mekayim a mitzvah. They will be doing a mitzvah. Right? So therefore, that'll be somewhat of a counterbalance. Now, that is only going to work if there is a mitzvah on the other side. Now, in order to do this, we have to take a step back and say, well, what is the mitzvah of Peru Revu? Right? The Gemara tells us that when a person, after 120 or so years, goes up to heaven, there are certain questions that you're asked upon entrance. In the business of procreating, Rabbi J. David Black points out that the question isn't, were you mekayim this mitzvah? Did you in fact fulfill this mitzvah? But rather, were you involved in it? Why? Because Peru Revu is a strange type of mitzvah in terms of there's only so much man can do. And then ultimately, the final step is in God's hands. So if somebody would have 5 children, but they would all happen to be girls, hypothetically, right? If you could imagine such a situation, right? Then that person is not mekayim the mitzvah. Because as we said, there's a machloket to Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, you need 2 sons, you need a son and a daughter. But nobody says 5 daughters, does it? So therefore, you're going to hold it against the poor guy. Poor guy's got to make 5 chasms tonight, you're going to kick him in the pants and say, you know, you weren't mekayim the mitzvah? The answer is no. The Gemara says, asakta, you do your best. And if you do your best, that's it. If God decides to give you sons, God decides to give you daughters, God decides to give you nothing. Right? A person, you know, who gets married, lives with his wife for many, many years, and they were never blessed with children, it's hard to hold it against the person that they didn't do this mitzvah. So therefore, Rabbi Bleich makes the argument that the mitzvah of Peru Revu is a very strange type of mitzvah. The mitzvah is that a person has to be osek in Peru Revu, that a person has to get married and live with his wife normally, and hope that they're blessed with children. And if they are, if they're blessed with a son and a daughter, at that point they no longer have to continue in this way. If they decide that they don't want any more children, then Peru Revu has been taken care of. We learn there is further mitzvahs of Lolotzon. This is a mitzvah which tells you that once you've accomplished this, you've gone far enough. However, it doesn't mean that this is the definition of the mitzvah. Because as we said, there is a possibility that people could do everything right and just never luck out as halachically. So therefore, Rabbi Bleich is of the opinion that the definition of the mitzvah of Peru Revu is to go about normal ways of having children. And therefore, Rabbi Bleich says that there is no reason to go and take what we would call heroic methods. All the modern technologies, which one wouldn't call natural, he said, are not required of a person. If a person is married to his wife, you know, and as far as they know, they're both fertile, right? He's married to a woman that has the ability to have children, and for whatever reason it hasn't worked out, so be it. So be it. That was God's decision, it wasn't your decision, and therefore you have no obligation beyond that. Now, on the one hand, that seems to be a kula, a lenient opinion, because this limits what you have to do. On the other hand, it could turn around very quickly and be a very stringent opinion. Why? Let's say a couple wants to undergo IVF. And IVF, it will involve taking injections on Shabbos. Now, taking an injection on Shabbos is arguably a violation of the Shabbos. Are you causing a wound? You could be drawing blood. So if you would tell me that, no, the mitzvah Peru Revu requires and is incumbent upon the people to do whatever is possible, very few things that a person's allowed to sell a sefer Torah for. One of them is to get married and have children. A person needs money for a dowry. If you have all you have is a sefer Torah, you're allowed to sell it. So if you tell me that the definition of the mitzvah is to try your hardest to have children, well, then we would be less concerned with all of the potential bumps along the road. However, you tell me that this is no mitzvah whatsoever. The mitzvah is just to try your best. And whatever you're doing at this point, you're doing it for yourself, because God does not require this of you. Then, of course, you're getting to the point where the practical steps involved in many of these technologies will become halachically perhaps insurmountable. That is the opinion of Rabbi Bleich. And Rabbi Bleich, in fact, does hold that IVF is halachically not permissible, definitely not preferable. I was fascinated. I was once at a panel. And he was there, there were 3 people in the panel. It was him, Zev Rosenwax, who's a very well-known urologist in the New York area, an Israeli fellow. And I think it was Adrian Ash, who was a biomedical ethicist. The 3 of them were on the panel. And they were each representing the, you know, what is normative views, normative of the doctors, etc. And I was sitting there scratching, like, how in the world did you pick Rabbi Bleich? He has the most wild ideas out of anybody. I mean, if anybody knows anything about his opinions, he holds the whole thing's not allowed. So that's his opinion. I can say pretty safely that that's a minority opinion. That there are different approaches as to why it is a minority opinion, but it definitely is, and most of the poskim are of the opinion that, in fact, it is allowed. It's not so much that I disagree with his understanding of the mitzvah of Puru Revu. I think if it works out, whichever way you consider working out, you know, that's the way it is. However, other people are saying that you're forgetting another important element in this. The Nitziv, in his Tshuva Sefer, Yimeshiv Dover, asks a very interesting question. We all know the story of Chana, at the beginning of Shmuel. Chana was childless, and she was very upset about it. And the Gemara in Brachos tells us that Chana turned around to God and says, listen, God, we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way. It's up to you. Right? The easy way is you give me children. The hard way is as follows. The hard way is I'm going to go and I'm going to make myself into a sota, meaning that I'm going to make Elkanah, my husband, jealous of me. He'll tell me not to be alone with somebody, and in fact, I'll be alone with the person. And then they're going to take me to the base of Migdash, Mishkan in that case, Mishkan Shiloh. They're going to make me, and they're going to take the name of God, and they're going to put it in the water. It's going to dissolve, and put some dirt in it, and I'm going to drink it. And of course, I wouldn't have done anything wrong, right? I wouldn't have not been with this man. And therefore, there isn't a guarantee in the Chumash that a woman who goes through this, right, will be in fact given children if she didn't have. He said, God, we can do this either way. You can either give me the children or else I'm going to do all this. Threatens God. Fascinating. So there's a few basic questions. So Jim asks, I don't understand. What are the right to do this? How could you even threaten God? And if God, you would have done that? Chana was a holy woman. She wouldn't have done that. So the Tziv explains as follows. The Tziv says, let's go back to Bereishis. In Bereishis, after Leah has one child after another, and Rachel doesn't have any, Rachel turns to Yaakov and says what? Give me children. Vim ayin? No, Israelis. Ayin mesa anochi. Right? If not, I'm as good as dead. So Netziv said that's literal. That's literal. For a woman not to have children, psychologically, it is as painful as death. And therefore, we take this literally. That for a woman who wants to have children, not to have children, right, it is of the level that you do whatever you can. And therefore, Chana took Rachel literally, and she was right. She had a right that the only way that she's going to have children is to set this up. The Nitziv is of the opinion that that was allowed. That on the one hand, halachically is one thing, but to understand the emotions, the psychology, that should not be taken lightly either. So I think that is a major opinion. It's interesting that I was reading today, they have in Idos a 3-volume set from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach on Refuah. Shulchan Shlomo, I think it's called. It's black. It's gold lettering on it. I judge books by their cover. I don't remember what it's called. So it
goes with the hat.
Right. With gold. Stark. So to do about it, is he chayv to go with it? Because him and his wife have made a decision that, listen, if they have to do it, they'll do it. But if not, they're willing to sit back and whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from them, they'll do. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, halachically, you don't have to do it. The Puru Revu does not require you to do this. However, you should know your wife is lying to you. So what your wife is telling you, I'm willing to do it, I'm willing to sit back because she doesn't want to upset you anymore. But a woman's psychology itself, that there's a chiv of v'simachas ishto, you've got to do whatever you can to try to provide her with a child, and therefore you have to do it. And it would seem, based on this idea, that beyond the technical, halachic view of Puru Revu, the Torah also looks into the emotions, it looks into the psychology, it also considers all the other issues as well. So, That being said, that being the majority opinion in my understanding, so therefore you do have this trade-off, meaning that there is this possibility that one can offset something that would be questionably halachic, a derabanan or the like, for the greater goal here of having children. Now, starting out early, so it used to be that the cutting edge of artificial reproductive technology was artificial insemination, which isn't that exciting technology or abnormal sperm when they need a little bit of a push. It happens to also be very useful, arguably, in a case which is far more common, which is called halachic infertility. What is halachic infertility? Halachic infertility affects women that have short cycles. The basic understanding of science nowadays is that a woman ovulates 2 weeks prior to her period, which means kind of like if you drive past the McDonald's, you've gone too far. That's the type of thing. You don't know what's going on at the time, but in hindsight, you can figure it out when it was. So, take with that in mind, and again, a woman, this egg, which is released 2 weeks beforehand, can be fertilized for a 24-hour period, meaning that woman is fertile for those 24 hours. And again, any sperm that was within her is viable for 72 hours, so anything that was beforehand is also possible. 24 hours after the ovulation, it's over, right? Done for the month. Now, let's take a case where a woman has a short cycle, let's say a 25-day cycle. Okay? 25-day cycle means that she will be ovulating on day number 11, 2 weeks before the end of the cycle. We know that a woman who keeps the family purity laws of Nida cannot be with her husband, best case scenario, until the 12th day. That means if a woman regularly has short cycles, you're in a situation where she will be infertile, because her and her husband will never be together at a time when it is possible for her to become pregnant. The issue there is, well, is there a possibility for them not to question of man and wife being together naturally versus a doctor injecting sperm, same or different? And this has a few nafkaminas. Now, in terms of the case we're talking about, a woman cannot be with a man when she's in Nida. Is this considered being with a man? If not, well, then it's fine. This is a way of going about it. This would work. The other possibility is you can also have artificial insemination from a donor. Now, that, of course, leads to bigger questions, right? Again, is it a woman being fertilized through this method same or different than being together with a man? There's some obvious issues that are involved here. One is adultery. A married woman cannot be with another man. If you say that this is similar, then she would be considered an adulteress, and therefore she can no longer remain married to her husband. Beyond that, what is the status of the child? In the event that a married woman has a child with anyone other than her husband, that child would have the status of mamzer, which is a really rotten thing. So, where does it fall out? This was a major machlokes 30, 40 years ago, with many people going in on both sides. Like, he didn't encourage it. He thought it was at least a shaila, you shouldn't do it. But if someone went about and they did it, then he thought that that was, the woman could remain married to her husband, and the child was not a mamzer. There were people all the way on the other side of the spectrum, and there are people in the middle of the spectrum as well. Right? There are people who thought that maybe it was adultery, but the kid wasn't the mamzer. And there are people who went as far as to say the child was a mamzer. Now, that machokas does not necessarily translate into the same machokas by Nida. Because again, in the case, there's definitely no adultery involved because this is the husband's sperm, right? In terms of mamzerus, so a woman and a man and a woman that are together while she is in Nida does not make a mamzer in any case, right? It was just the question of halachically is this allowed, right? Even though the ultimate payoff wouldn't have been, And there's a discussion whether a girl who's born from a woman who is neither is allowed to marry a Kohen. That's it. It's interesting. The bottom line is we live in a world where there are an awful lot of Ben and Bas Nidas. Right? Any Baal Tshuva, one would have to imagine their parents did not keep Taras Meshbacha. So the question is that something we should be avoiding? It's very interesting. There are two well-known tshuvas on the matter. One of them is a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, the other is a tshuva of the Stipler. Rav Moshe Feinstein, thank you, Rabbi. Rav Moshe Feinstein has the odder of the two tshuvas. We'll start with, because they're likely to have nidos raos, bad traits. Gemara tells a story about there was a kid running around and he was full of chutzpah. And the Chachamim said, oh, this must be a ben nida. And in fact, they looked into it and it was true. So the Stipler Gaon says as follows. He says there's not a 100% correlation between ben nida or bas nida and bad midos. It's just a matter that they're more likely to have it. However, if you meet this guy, you meet this girl, and in fact, they have wonderful midos, and even though there's a very good chance they are, so again, it was more likely they were at risk for it, but thankfully they didn't pick it up. So that's not a problem. Moshe Feinstein has a much odder tshuva. He thinks that there's 100% correlation. However, he says, if you see that in fact they have good midos, it must be that the mother probably went swimming in a swimming pool that was technically a good mikvah, and there wasn't such a tight-fitting bathing suit. Okay. So Moshe Feinstein could say that. But one way or another, this isn't something that we are as concerned with nowadays. So I think the majority of the poskim allow a couple to use artificial insemination with the husband's sperm in a case where the woman has this issue of particularly short cycles. I think that's a lot. Now, around eggs out of the woman, introduce them in a comfortable setting of a petri dish to around 50,000 sperm from the husband. They let it sit a little bit, see if they get together. If things work out, these turn into embryos, and the embryos in turn can be implanted into the woman. Now, this is expensive, and besides being expensive, it's not easy on the woman. So therefore, obviously the doctors try to raise the odds of this working as much as possible. Now, a woman in a typical cycle will give off one egg, maybe two eggs, three eggs on the very high side. In order to push the numbers ahead, what they do is they give the women fertility drugs. The fertility drugs cause the woman, every month that there are many follicles which can let off an egg. What these drugs is they push more of the follicles to actually give off eggs. And it's not uncommon for a woman to have 15, 20, 25 eggs, maybe even 30, on these drugs. Now, what that allows the doctors to do is to harvest these eggs. And you obviously just play the numbers. You can do a lot better with 20 eggs than you're going to do with two eggs. So therefore, if you take 20 eggs and you fertilize them and a quarter of them are fertilized, you have five. For half, you have 10. Now, what this allows you to do is, one, is you can implant more. Instead of one, you could go for two, you could go for three. You probably don't want to really do much more than three because you might be going through the whole process again. You just take a few, pop them out of the ice cube holder, and you can just wait a month or so and re-implant. No problem to it. IVF is very useful for other reasons as well. One reason IVF is very useful is it's a good diagnostic tool. It's the only way you're ever going to get a good look at the woman's eggs. A woman has a genetic issue with her eggs, the only way you'll ever find out about this is through IVF. That's one thing. Another issue is it bypasses a lot of the process. So if a woman has blocked fallopian tubes, no problem. IVF will eliminate the need for the fallopian tubes, and with that, things will go fine. When you hear things about Octomom, I should just note, that has nothing to do with this. Right? But you can't get Octomom through IVF. in the north, you could, but that doctor would have to be taken out and shot shortly thereafter. Octomom comes from taking the fertility drugs and not doing IVF. Right? So taking the fertility drugs, have her giving her 20 eggs, and then her just living with a man and having target practice. That's how you get these absurd numbers. And any doctor who allows that, who allows a woman to take these drugs and doesn't monitor her for this possibility, right? And then afterwards, we should not be applauding them on national TV. We should be taking away their licenses, likely, for doing something like this. So that's the basics of IVF. Now, IVF also, problem is, if a woman is producing beautiful eggs, and they're all turning into embryos, and then they're not being carried, we can see that there's a uterine issue here. If the woman's eggs are fine, however, the issue is that she has what they call an incompetent uterus. Very harsh words, I think. Doctors come up with something nicer than that, right? In the event that we look at it and you know she's just not producing her eggs look bad under the microscope, we know that she has an egg issue, and we can deal with those issues as is necessary. In the event that the woman has fine, wonderful-looking eggs, right, poster child eggs, however, she has a uterine issue, the obvious next step is surrogacy. Right? How do you say surrogacy in Hebrew? One of my favorite Hebrew words. Em pundakit, right? Pundakait. And what does that literally mean? Like a motel. Right. To motel. Right. I understand. Right. Maybe she's an innkeeper. You just pop it in there for her. She'll remember to leave the lights on for you. And you know.
Why don't we use word for?
What? Right. So that, of course, is one possibility. In the event that we see that the woman has an egg issue, then we can turn for donor eggs. Right. You can get a donor egg. Fertilize the donor egg in the same petri dish, and then implant that, and the woman can carry a child for 9 months, right? IVF opens up worlds of possibilities. Yes.
Is there a child who the mother is, if someone else?
Of course there is. That's how I get shiurim. Come on, rabbis need to make money also, not just the doctors. So, when there was a case, it's interesting. So let's go back to artificial insemination. You have the question of, okay, we know who the mother is. That's an easy one. But who's the father there? If you have donor sperm, does that person become the father? If there's not donor sperm, if we say technically the father was never together with the mother, is he the father? Now, of course, science creates questions that are beyond reasonable. Israeli Army had an issue recently, it's been 2 years ago already. Right. A soldier dies, and the mother wants to do a testicular biopsy to pull out some sperm to go and use ICSI. Right. Won't explain ICSI, but it's the thing that does this. That you could have a child. You think about it, having children, you know, long after you're dead. That's a strange idea. Being Micaiah Mitzvahs years after? It's a question. Now, it happens to be when it comes to fatherhood, there are two possibilities. Either the person who provides the biological matter is the father, or there is no father. Right? That is a possibility in halacha. In the event a non-Jewish man has a child with a Jewish woman, halachically there is no father. When it comes to producing a child, the man's job is somewhat limited. However, the woman's job is much greater, meaning that the woman's job is really broken into two steps. There is providing the biological matter, much like the father, but then there's this minor matter of the next 9 months, where the husband is perhaps boiling water, ripping sheets, telling her to breathe, you know, feeling her pain. Buying strange groceries, you know, there are different things that they might be doing. However, none of them probably add up to actually carrying a child. Yeah? I mean, I can hear the argument otherwise, don't get me wrong. So, for all eternity, it would have seemed that the same woman who is the biological mother is also the gestational mother. All of a sudden, with IVF now, we've got this possibility that there's two different people, that Jimmy has two mommies, right? The question is now, who is the actual mother, right? Is it, in fact, the woman who provides the egg, the biological mother, or is it the woman who gives birth to the child? And now, all of a sudden, there's a possibility it could be one or the other. And you should know, this is a very hard question, and there's no answer that makes everybody happy. I'll tell you, in the Beis Din, I remember at one point, 1 week apart, we got two questions that really highlighted this. The first case was a woman who had just given birth to a girl that had, I think it's called Taylor's disease. Basically, it's a little bit like this. I definitely said that wrong. It goes a little, because of a chromosomal defect, these children are born without any eggs, which means at birth, you already know that the girl is going to be sterile. She'll never have any children. The mother comes forward with the following child. The woman is in, let's say, her low 30s. She's still fertile, very fertile, let's say. And she wants to undergo the first half of IVF. It means she wants to take fertility drugs, produce many eggs, and freeze the eggs, with the thought being that she will leave these eggs for her daughter. And one day her daughter will come home with a nice boy, and they'll want to start a family. And with that, the husband will fertilize his mother-in-law's eggs, stick it in the wife, and they will have children that will be genetically similar to her. Is that allowed? Question number one. Question number two. There is a young couple that has repeatedly miscarried. And the doctors turned to her and they said, listen, you know, the way to go at this point is surrogacy. However, in the state of New York, we don't really like surrogacy ever since Baby M. Do you remember Baby M? Baby M was one of the very early cases, I guess I'm nodding there, where a couple contracted with another woman to be a surrogate. At the end of 9 months, the woman who gave birth said, this is my child, I'm not giving it back. They said, we had a contract. She said, you can't have a contract to sell your children. That's illegal. It's not enforceable. The contract is absolutely useless, no matter how you slice it here. And therefore, the courts don't really know how to deal with this. So in order to deal with the problem of not knowing how to deal with this question, the courts will encourage patients not to do it. Because if this goes wrong, we can't even begin to guess how to help you. Just to give you an idea, this is a case from California. You'll understand why it has to be from California. There was a case at one point of a child who had six parents in California. How did that happen? A couple decided to have a child. So he got a sperm donor, and she got an egg donor, and together they made embryos, and they placed it in a surrogate mother who was married to another man. Surprisingly, at the end of 9 months, the original couple had broken up. They weren't interested in the child anymore. Right? This is, it has to be California. Right? So here we have it. Who are the parents? Right? The sperm donor and the egg donor? The surrogate and her husband? The two people who didn't actually do anything, but they arranged the whole party. And they're all not interested in it because this is California. But someone's got to support the child. We got to send the kid home with somebody. So needless to say, the courts just want nothing to do with this. The courts don't want to deal with it. The legislators don't want to legislate on this. Right? No one wants this. This is definitely the case of the third wheel of politics. No one wants to touch it. So therefore, the rule in the state of New York is we don't do it. Unless there is somebody who will be the surrogate who we are guaranteed will not be suing over this. Bill, where are you going to find that? Close relative. Family. So in this case, the husband's mother says, I'll do it. I'll carry the baby. Is she allowed to? Any opinions? Is she allowed to? Or are you saying that she's having a child with her son, which is a problem? So well, we have two cases there. One, can the woman freeze the eggs? And two, can the woman be a surrogate for her son and daughter-in-law? Yes on both?
I'm saying yes on the second one. I'm thinking about the first one.
Was that doctor? So we have one opinion on the second case. So far, that's all we can get out of this crowd. Well, let's play it out. Okay. Again, we're back to the original question. Obviously, are we looking at biological or gestational? Right. Us Yankee fans know who's your daddy. This is who's your mommy. So.
I'm gonna say yes on both cases.
Okay.
So
defend yourself. How do you say that? Who do you think is the mother? Do you think that gestational or biological is the actual mother, in your thinking?
I think that. I don't do this every day like you do.
Again, you know who the biological parents are. That is correct. Okay.
But I think in the case of the mother freezing her eggs, so that the daughter can produce children, I think that would be, I mean, they're biologically hers, but she's related to her daughter, so.
Right, so, but technically, the mother and father in this case would be a man and his mother-in-law.
Yes.
That could give you the willies. Think about having children with your mother-in-law. I didn't mean to scare you. What? Yes. Mother-in-law is. Yes.
We're playing emotion right now. I mean, it halakhically has to be consistent. It's either the biological mother or it's the gestational. We can't say that in the case of the woman who freezes her eggs, that really it's the daughter's because she wants.
Right. So the point you're making is we'd like to make everybody happy. Right? Right? We want to say yes to the first case, and we want to say yes to the second case, but
it can't be both. It can't be both.
So we both meaning what? You say that they're both also.
No, you're not the mother once you're both. Once you're both
so okay. Okay, we're not talking about Erva here, but we're talking about the bushes now. Right. Right, so yeah, the child might not be a mamzer or mamzeris, depending if they have a boy or a girl, but that doesn't make.
But really,
because?
Because it's more likely that whoever is, not in the case of surrogacy, but in other most cases, it's more likely that whoever's giving birth to the child is going to raise the child. And in my mind, most important, the mother and the father is who's raising the child.
So what about adopted children?
Well, what about the child?
So
they raise it, right?
Right.
Yes.
So I guess, so you think that the adopted parents and not the natural parents are the actual parents?
I think the adopted parents are the parents.
So let's say the adopted parents are a Kohen and the original parents weren't. Would you call the child a Kohen?
Well, that's your decision.
Would you call them? let's say Jewish parents adopt a non-Jewish child. They automatically become Jewish?
No.
So what do you say?
You go through the conversion.
But why do you have to? According to you, you shouldn't have to. Yes?
I'm thinking that's a problem of you've got to take a close family relative. I almost don't know if it's incest because the courts don't know how to decide. So the solution is the courts have to learn how to decide. If the problem is...
But say, obviously, halacha, we don't really care what the courts say. You're saying that we got into trouble because the courts... What?
Or maybe the Beit Din has to...
Well, again, the Beit Din has to... So again, I think the focus is on the first one, and I think that...
No, just say I want the grandmother so the child can look
back.
No,
it's not about looking like
this. I'm saying the infant was born without eggs.
Yes.
She could one day get eggs adopted by a stranger where there's no risk of incest.
Absolutely. There happens to be a fascinating ethical question out there. Not necessarily Jewish ethical, but regular ethical about the idea of paying women for their eggs. For example, we assume that's unethical to pay someone for their kidneys. However, we don't think it's unethical to pay women for their eggs. And there's a question where the fine line happens. I remember when I was in Colombia, there was an ad in the Spectator, which was a local newspaper,
still
looking for a woman at least 5'10", you know, who has at least a 1400 on their SATs, you know, willing to pay $50,000 for their eggs, you know, in an Ivy League school. As much as I tried to convince my wife, you know, she's married, she wouldn't do it. I don't know why. But yeah, that happened to be an interesting ethically.
Going back to this question of incest, I don't think it's incest if you're harvesting eggs. Incest is an act.
Okay.
Unless the courts are ruling it differently. I don't consider that incest.
Right, but again,
so I'm asking you, is that incest?
So again, if I wasn't talking religiously, I was just talking scientifically, I'd say if somebody has if there's a baby between a woman, and her son-in-law, I mean, that kid's gonna have three eyes. Like, how does that work? Right. Probably not, though. Right? But you know, there's.
What?
I don't know what halakha, all the halakha or macro implications are, but genetically, the parents of the people who have contributed.
That is correct.
Now, if you're talking about the case of a Kohen, why don't you just say that a Jewish couple adopts a child of Kohen?
Mm-hmm.
Is that child still a Kohen?
I think so. What do you think?
Well, if that's the case, then you would follow the genetic material.
No, because the couple that adopted did not carry the child in utero for 9 months. Right, again, in the case of adoption, the same mother produced the biological material and carried the baby and gave birth to the baby. I remember you, so... I was driving back once from a wedding. In fact, it was Rabbi Yonah Reese's wedding. And in the back seat, I was me and my wife in the front seat, and in the back seat we had Arthur Hyman, who was the dean of the Revel Graduate School, Michael Broyd, who was a professor of law at Emory, and his son, Joshi, who just got engaged. This goes back a few years. Joshi was 8 at the time, I believe. And so I'm driving, and I said, so Michael, what are you working on these days? And he said, he's dealing with a lot of these issues. I said, very interesting. What in particular? So he said to me, well, there's a rumor. He doesn't know if it's true or not. But they're trying to work on this. Since we have such an issue of surrogate motherhood, of the various issues of it, they don't give up, they want to set up a situation with their two possibilities. The child is either Jewish or Fleishigs. Or Fleishigs. Right? Right? quite a spectrum you have there. Right? So this is an issue. This is a big issue. Right? This is an issue that it's an ongoing issue. We'll just try to raise some of the potential sources which might lead us. There happens to be one famous source in the an Agadic source. It's referred to somewhat in Rashi and the Chumash. If you remember, let's go back to Rachel and Leah. So, Yaakov, what? Rachel and Leah. So, Rachel has a bunch of children. Leah has a bunch of children. They have Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. And then Rachel says, Imai Mesa Nochi. So with that, she gives over her Shifcha. Her Shifcha has two kids, right? Leah gives over her Shifcha. Her Shifcha has two kids. Leah then has two more kids. Get to the Dudaim. Okay? Now, where are we up to? We're up to 6, 2, and 2.
10.
Everybody knows somehow or another that there's going to be 12. And now Leah is pregnant again. And Leah does the higher math. If she has another boy, the maximum amount of boys that Rachel is ever going to have is 1, which is even less than Bilhah and Zilpah. So therefore, she prays. She prays that her child, who was supposed to be a boy, becomes a girl. The way the Medrash states is as follows. At the time, Rachel was pregnant with Dina.
No.
Rachel was pregnant with Dina. Now, assuming we accept that Medrash, we have an odd case of where a child was conceived in one mother and given birth to by another mother. And the implication of that would be that which would the real mother be? The birthing mother, right? The gestational mother. Again, but that's a medrash, it's an agarata. We're not going to let it fly on that. Yes?
Is there anything based on,
Again, peter rechem, what would the case be? Peter rechem is first one out. Right? Right? That's clearly best based on gestational, nothing else. Yes?
What about
you, Yibum? It's definitely the same mother.
Okay, we're
focused on the mother now.
Okay,
so even if you're going to get Kabbalistic on me, right, and say it's really considered, that's only going to move the father. Probably the issue that arguably the case which is most relevant to this is a case which is actually somewhat practical. The Gemara discusses the case of Mu'uberes Shenisgaira. If a pregnant woman converts, what is the status of the child? Is the child Jewish or not Jewish? This possibility is that the child is a limb of the mother. And therefore, when someone jumps into the mikveh to convert, the hands get wet, the feet get wet, right? The nose gets wet, and they all become Jewish. But the kidneys and the liver do not get wet. Do they not have kosher Jewish kishkes? No, the entire body becomes Jewish because they're all limbs of one body. And just like the kidneys and the intestines and the liver, etc., and the lungs are all going to become Jewish, so too this fetus is another part of the mother, and therefore the child is born Jewish. It's Jewish, 100% it is done.
Born again.
What?
Born again.
No, born Jewish.
Born Jewish.
According to this one, we're assuming born Jewish. Right? Because again, because the leg, right? Because the leg, etc., originally weren't Jewish, right? Originally weren't Jewish. Before Charles is born, there's no talking of Jewish or not Jewish. So as soon as the child was born, it was Jewish. The second possibility is as follows: that no, the embryo, the fetus at this point actually, is separate from the mother. However, we know that, so when someone goes to the mikvah, there can't be what's called a chatzitza, a barrier between the person's skin and the water. However, let's say you have a situation, let's say a person has brain surgery and they have a plate in their head. Do you have to remove it before you go to the mikvah? Thankfully not. Why? Because you need it to live. Anything that you need, it's part of you, and you need. So in this case, yes, the child is not part of the mother. However, it has a life support system, and that is the mother. So therefore, when the mother goes into the mikvah, it is as if the child went into the mikvah also. And even though the child didn't get wet, still, there was no break, technically, between the child and the water. And therefore, the child has also done the conversion process. Now, in that case, the child is born again. That's the way we're assuming. And there are big differences. So yes, the child is Jewish, but there is a whole slew of differences as to how we get there. One example, let's say the child is a boy. I hear there are people who give birth to boys. I've heard such a rumor, right? If such a strange thing would happen at one point, when would the child's bris be? So when a Jewish boy is born, he has a bris on the eighth day, whether it's Shabbos or not. This would not be a person who's having a bris because they are Jewish. This is a person who's having a bris because this is the second half of their conversion process. Therefore, they can have it on the first day, the second day, the third day, the 98th day. They can do it before the eighth day. They can do it after the eighth day. They definitely can't do it on Shabbos, even no matter when it falls out. Right? Because the bris is not a bris as a Jewish boy is born, but rather it is a bris of a conversion. So that is one difference. Is the child related to his mother? Right? If it's born Jewish, it's Jewish. And besides these and many other differences, there are a handful of others you can also list off, there's a difference as to, well, one could look at this and say, is it possible for a Jewish woman to give birth to a non-Jewish baby? If you tell me that the conversion process is that this is part of the mother and the mother's Jewish and the kid's Jewish and that's the end of it, that would seem to be indicating that we care about the birth mother. However, if you tell me that this woman is giving birth to a child that still needs to convert, and this woman is Jewish at the time of birth, then one could make an argument that, in fact, it is the biological mother that really matters. So here's an odd case. The woman that conceived this child was not Jewish. The woman gave birth to this child is Jewish. It happens to be the same woman. But one could draw a parallelism from one to the other. How do we paskin? We don't know. Right? To the extent possible, the approach has been just avoid it. How do you avoid it? You avoid it, for example, if you're going to use a surrogate, use a non-Jewish woman, and then convert the kid misafek. Right? Take the kid, throw it in the mikveh, done. Either way, the kid's Jewish now. That is the approach we're taking. What if you didn't? What if push really comes to shove? Which one do we hold of? That's actually been swinging. That has been actually, the Jewish Week read an article on this recently. The opinion of the Rabbanut is changing on this. It's in flux. It's a very difficult question, and it's a question that's got to be answered. I think, what?
Yeah, you just dodged that.
Yeah, it would have been successful had it not been for you, might I add. But again, each case is individual. As some say, we're not here to possible, we're just here to raise the issues. Now, of course, there's always the one step beyond. So, if you remember, in our original case, way back, we had this ice tray full of embryos. And we said that, okay, we're going to implant a few of them. Let's say we implant three, and the woman has two children. And then we implant another three, she has another child. And then she says, you know, I'm happy with my family. I'm glad this has worked out for me. Thank you very much. I'm done. What do you do with the rest of the ice tray? Now, logically, there's a few possibilities. You can just defrost them. Goodbye. You can give them up for adoption. Implant it in another woman. You can use them for stem cells. This is the stem cell question. All the talk about stem cells comes down to this. So the idea is as follows. There are something called stem cells. Stem cells are these magical cells, right? When the egg and the sperm meet, they split into two cells, and then they split into four, and then they split into eight. And they're all the same cell. But somehow or another, some of these cells are going to be the nose, and some of them are going to be the kishkes, and some of them are going to be the heart, and some of them are going to be the placenta. They're not going to have anything to do with it. These same cells are going to turn into a inch and sprinkle some on the heart. All better. That's the dream of stem cells. And the stem cells, since they can become anything you need, you just use them. We're not quite sure how that works yet. I remember at this panel I mentioned earlier, so this fellow Zev Rosenwax went and he brought some slides from an Israeli company, an Israeli lab, which had taken stem cells and turned them into heart cells, and you see them. Pretty freaky, huh? Yeah? And they actually sit there beating in the petri dish. That's pretty cool. Now, where do we get these stem cells from? So the answer is that there are literally hundreds of thousands of embryos sitting out there with nothing to do. The number is staggering how many are out there. So the question is, can you do this? Well, there is an opinion out there. This opinion is held up by the church, that you can't because it's murder. And that's how we get into our political issue here. Now, what do we say about the halachah? So again, in order for this to be murder, you've got to put together a slew of assumptions.
These are fertilized eggs that you're talking about.
Right. Right. These are fertilized eggs because these are stem cells, right? The blastocyte, is that what they call it? Is a bunch of stem cells. That's what it is. So the question is, what would we have to assume? One is I would have to assume that abortion is murder. Right? This is definitely, if abortion's not murder, this isn't murder. And halachically, that's very questionable, whether abortion is murder or not. I think the majority opinion is that it's not. It's not allowed, but it's not murder. I think we assume that abortion is considered maiming. We think it's maiming. So therefore, the difference being that in general, we don't let people maim themselves either. But, you know, if somebody would need to amputate a limb in order to save their life, we would allow it. So too, even though we wouldn't let you kill someone to save your life. So too here, that would be the rules that we would be following. So that's step number one. You have to assume that abortion is murder. Okay. Two, you have to think that this is the equivalent of an abortion. Now, there's a big difference between stem cell research and an abortion. In the event that a woman is pregnant with a viable fetus, if she would not have an abortion, what would happen? Give birth. If we did not destroy this embryo in the freezer, what would happen? It would be an embryo in the freezer for a long time to come. Also, the process of defrosting an embryo is much less active than the process of an abortion. Right? Basically, the process isn't doing something, it's not doing something. Right? You flip the switch on the freezer, you stop paying the electric bill, whatever it is, it happens. Was one of the reasons he said it was usher is he said, why? Because the church calls it an abomination. The church was opposed to it at the time. And there's no way that they're going to out from us. There's an idea that Jews cannot look morally inferior to the church. I assume that logic, if you accept it, would apply here as well. On the other hand, you know, it's kind of odd to say we have to be firmer than the Pope, as the saying.
I personally think it's immoral.
She said it.
No, but I would argue that it's immoral.
What's immoral?
It's immoral to leave, to actually have embryos that potentially can save people. And you don't use them.
So I'll be
That's
the Pope
immoral.
Now. I'm wearing a yarmulke, I'll be the Pope. I'll turn around. I'll say, what do you mean? These frozen embryos, you shouldn't be using them for spare parts. Implant them in a woman and then make child out of this.
But that's not
You're using it for research that it could be in years from now they'll figure out somehow it could be.
That is absolutely not.
I could make a life right now and now. You're killing a child.
That's not a natural process. That's not a natural process. That doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, what are we?
I don't support it. But
go get women off the street and go implant them.
I said, no. Whoever was the woman who made it, let her implant it. This was her great idea.
I get it. You know, it's not her great
she
idea.
She decides she's had enough children?
No, but the point is that you have...
Would you have an abortion because she decides she's had enough children?
You have an excess of things. You have an excess of things. I'm just saying that...
These things are lives.
It is not at all clear to me that is the... To me, it's not the operating thing. I don't think that...
I don't know. Slightly more, I've heard a rumor even.
I don't know.
Right, so that's the story. So again, that's one step beyond. The next step beyond is obviously cloning. Mm-hmm. Cloning is not the boys from Brazil. Cloning is the next step in fertility therapy, right? You have a man who has a sperm count of zero, but he has a cheek cell count that's very healthy, right? His wife's egg plus his cheek cell, we're set if cloning works, right? People get nervous about cloning, but cloning is just the next quantum leap in this idea. And how are we going to deal with that? You know, can a man become a father through the use of his cheek cell? We have an assumption that a young boy under the age of and if you use a woman's cheek cell, she's the father?
She's the mother.
No, not the one who carried it.
Her cheek cell and her egg. Okay. There's no father. It's a cloned baby.
I'm not talking about the same woman whose egg it is gives the cheek cell. I'm talking about another woman gives the cheek cell.
Again, then there's no father.
So, but why did this woman do less?
It's a name.
question is as follows.
Yes.
Two women.
Right.
They decide to have a child. One woman provides the egg. The other woman provides the cheek cell.
Okay.
They make an embryo. One of the women carries it.
Okay.
Okay? You just told me, if a man and a woman, one provides an egg, one provides a cheek cell,
mm-hmm.
and then one woman carries it, the man who provides the cheek cell is considered the father.
Right.
In my case, where a woman provides an egg, and a woman provides a cheek cell, then why isn't the woman the father?
It's just because she's...
Because she's a girl?
Yeah.
No, so it's two mothers. I mean, I don't really see why that's so difficult. It's two mothers, that's all.
So you think she is the mother, though?
They're both mothers.
Two mothers?
Yes,
they
two mothers.
Provided
to
them.
But what about,
correct.
What about
one may be a gestational mother as well as a biological mother.
They're both biological mothers.
Yes, Rabbi.
Right. I mean, it's wild, but yes, they're both biological mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to say that all reproductive material is outside of the body and
on that
inside
road.
The body?
Okay.
Anything that's outside the body, it can have a mother. It doesn't really, because there was no unit, there was no merger. In other words, mixing takes place in separate. Someone brings them together, so it's not the doctor who puts the sperm and the egg together. So in other words, that's all irrelevant. And what you get is if you get a viable egg that you put into a mother, this is
a viable embryo. This has to be. You're not putting viable eggs. You're putting a viable embryo. That means the egg would, right, and the embryo is mixed with some other biological matter. So you're saying the person who provides the biological matter outside the body is and does not get parenthood?
Yes.
So you're telling me that if a child's born from IVF and then goes and punches his father in the nose, he's not liable because he's not chayav in kibbutz. And you're telling me that the father's not mekayim pru revu through doing this. And therefore, there's no sense in doing this halachically. There's no counterbalance. If there's an issue that you have to take a shot on Shabbos, that would not be allowed, you'd say.
Every child born of IVF is
I think the mother's claim.
No, because the mother's Jewish.
I think there's more ways.
He's not saying that.
I think the problem here is trying to form
no, he
new
says
categories just to accept whole
language.
And it's not true. It's not even
so,
necessary.
So,
it's exactly what Dr. Munro said. You need to call it something else. You need a new word, that's all.
So there's no reason. Again, your assumptions were having a hard time, so therefore no one's the mother, no one's the father. Everyone go home.
No, but I'm not saying that.
Again, there are two categories
and we just haven't come up with the names yet.
So again,
and sitting here fighting, saying this one.
So again, the woman gets artificially inseminated with her husband's sperm. What are you saying?
In that case, it's quite clear. You follow the genetic material.
Okay.
Follow the biological parents.
And if I take the egg out,
and you take out the genetic material, and you take the cheek cell.
No. My question. I'm telling you now, okay, now I'm going to give you step number two. I take out the egg, I take the sperm, I mix it up, make the embryo, and then stick it in.
Fine.
Still good.
In this case, the process is a little different. The kid wants
okay, next step. Sex. Next step. I take it. I take the egg. I take the sperm, I make the embryo, and I put it in someone else. Now what?
The biological parents are the parents.
Okay.
Meaning the people who provided the genetic material, right?
Okay, so you're saying...
The other ones are rentable.
Right, so you don't care about gestational mothers.
It's the same as the Hebrew term. The Hebrew term is good. It's like an innkeeper.
Right, okay. So, but you're saying that you've just made a decision now.
Mm-hmm.
You've just decided that all you care about is biological. You don't care about...
I didn't say that. You're going further than I
am. Okay, so what did you
you're
say?
You're referring what I did not imply.
So, okay, so what are you saying if not that?
What
are you saying if not that?
I'm saying that as long as you follow the term, the biological material, they are the biological parents.
Okay.
We can
imagine, but again, but you said... Okay, but the woman, a couple where the woman gets donor eggs, and then the wife carries it.
Okay, we have two of them. Let's be precise so I know what you mean. You have a couple.
Men, right. Woman has no eggs.
Right.
Right, therefore, other woman provides eggs. Other woman's eggs are mixed with husband's sperm and placed in the wife. No, in the wife.
She's still on the tool.
Okay.
So let's go back to what I said. You're saying you don't care about gestational, you only care. Okay, so that was you denied 5 minutes ago is now true.
No, but you the other case was different. The genetic material also matched the gestational mother in the other case.
So again, so you're saying, at the end of the day, so the rule that you want is you want just biological. And of course, that doesn't apply if the biologic material is other than the normal material that we're used to.
I'm not sure.
So again,
and that's
mother.
Second, you're talking then about the case of the epithelial cell from the sheath.
Correct.
You're taking an entire genome from one of the.
From the husband.
Okay. Say it's from the husband, or say it's from the.
I say it's from the husband.
Partner. Doesn't matter.
I say it's from the husband.
A single parent.
Again, so the cheek cell from the husband, egg from the mother. You're saying.
You're saying the egg is empty of any genetic material, and you're implanting what is in effect a clone of the husband, correct?
These donor eggs. Say there's a woman and she gets a donor egg. She has that donor egg is now her egg. Okay, it came biologically from someone else.
But she bought it.
She bought it. It's hers.
Can't buy children. We don't allow that.
But the egg's not a child yet.
I understand, but you know, it's not, you know.
This is not a racist remark.
If I buy an egg from a black woman,
yeah,
the child's still going to be black, even though I bought it.
But it's still going to be yours.
What? It's going to be my child, and I have a right to love it and raise it as I want it, to send to the yeshiva I choose. But, you know, it's biologically not mine.
Certain
things can't be bought. Right? To quote MasterCard, you know, there's certain things are priceless.
Well, that may be, but it's a legitimate way to look at something.
What?
I mean, what happens now if you actually go out and you...
What if I bought your kids? Are they mine?
No. Kid is a living thing. No one says it's living.
I think we're breaking that in. You had a question? Yes. You waited so patiently.
So you're giving us the fun of being beginners and working through the questions, and have the rabbis already make some rulings on this?
They have, as the board.
Case by case.
So in case, not that, but rabbi by rabbi. Yeah, we have. I don't think that there's really been a consensus that has been reached yet.
So if it's rabbi by rabbi, that means my rabbi said it's okay, but maybe my daughter can't marry a Kohen because his rabbi doesn't accept the goal that he's going to date in 18 years or something.
Correct. That's a problem. Okay, we can continue the discussion afterwards. Thank you very much. See you next week. Same bat time.